583 responses. Fans, Chad Lysico here of the Des Moines Register, bringing you into what we think, hope, is the first live edition of our post-game podcast, a very popular one that's always been a lot of fun to do after the games. I feel personally pretty exhausted, Kennington Smith, after that game. That was like the most draining 7-3 outcome I've ever felt, although I haven't really felt that many 7-3 outcomes, especially with two safeties.
Yeah, well, you, myself, Kirk Ferentz, I guess everybody else who watched or attended are in the same boat, that they've never seen a 7-3 game where there's been a field goal and two safeties to get to that seven. That's probably why I felt so exhausting. It was just like so much going into the game for not a lot of action, if that makes sense. I mean, at one point, it looked like Iowa was going to win 5-3. Then they get that second safety, and it gets to 7-3. So I guess make the score look a little bit better. But it was an ugly game. There were some good things, obviously, defense and the special teams unit, and a lot of what I'm assuming we're going to talk most about tonight, which is the offense, which obviously have left much to be desired, and a lot of the same questions that we ended last season with. So I'm just ready to kind of get into it. First game back. So even for us, there were some kinks to work out in terms of just like getting adjusted to the game and riding on deadline and those things. Getting to the stadium, I got caught in traffic today, which has never happened to me before living out here. So this is one of them days, I guess.
Okay, so we've got a couple options here. Obviously, I mean, my feel is from the fan base that everyone's pretty upset, disappointed, concerned, and I think those are all valid things. I think we have two options here, Kennington. I think we can either just start and peel off the Band-Aid with the offense, or we can at least kind of give, you know, a couple positives, because, I mean, obviously when you hold a team to 3 points and 120 yards and have a punter like Iowa does, there's going to be positives. So where do you want to start?
I guess we'll start with the positives before we.
Okay, I agree. Here's a way. Negative part. Let's rank the most effective Iowa players today.
Okay.
Go. All right. You go one. I'll go two. And then we'll go.
Number one, Torrey Taylor.
Absolutely, there's no question. Yeah, MVP of the game. 47.9 yards per punt. The average field position for South Dakota State was their own 16. Iowa's was its own 42-yard line for the day.
Yeah.
And got no offensive points other than, a field goal is technically offensive, but that's special teams. So no touchdowns. First time Iowa's won a game with no touchdowns in 2004, 6-4 against Penn State, by the way. Two safeties in that one as well. Hawkeyes know how to – number two, I'm going to have to go with Jack Campbell. I know it's obvious, but, man, he was everywhere.
Yeah.
Two is Jack Campbell.
Yeah, that was probably my number two. I mean, 11 tackles, had the safety. I mean, he was everywhere, didn't come off the field. We saw a lot of Seth Benson, Justin Jacobs substituting before Justin got injured. Then we saw Logan Klemp in his place. Jack never left the field. High-impact player, this is kind of what you expect out of players like him, preseason All-Americans. I'm going to stay on the defensive side, and my number three most impactful player was Terry Roberts. The fact that he downed so many punts inside of the 10-yard line, and then what he did defensively was great against the run, had two pass breakups, had the last pass breakup at the end that really put the seal on the game. So he goes in my top three.
Quinn Schulte, a lot of questions about him. He's my number four here, if we're going in order. I mean, everyone wants to see Xavier Wamp at free safety. Quinn Schulte, in his first career start at free safety, was insanely good. Like, he was everywhere. including in the on the very last play of the game, South Dakota State's last kind of desperation attempt. You know, he just crushes that guy. You hoped if you're a Hawkeye fan there wasn't a targeting or late hit there, but it looked to be a clean hit. He was impressive. Four pass breakups in the game.
Yeah. So we're on four, I guess.
You're on five now. You're five.
I'm at five. This one is going to be tough because there are three defensive linemen who I could put in this place at five. But
Put them all in. Five.
Okay, well, to loop them all together, I'll say Joe Evans, Logan Lee, and Noah Shannon. Those three game wreckers on the defensive line. Noah Shannon had a fantastic first half. I mean, he was really disrupting South Dakota State's offense. There was one play in particular where he snuffed out a screen that allowed for Justin Jacobs to deliver a brutal hit on a tight end when South Dakota State was backed up inside their 10-yard line. Joe Evans, pulling up the stat sheet here, 2.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. Logan Lee, 6 tackles, second most on the team. 1.5 sacks, played great. I said on our radio show that I thought that Iowa's defensive line was where they held a really decisive advantage, and they were going to be the key to game-wrecking South Dakota State's offensive plans. They had a lot of skill. They had a lot of skill player weapons, and they did not get an opportunity to be utilized just because there was so much havoc at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I would say those three defensive linemen deserve some credit as well.
Yeah, and I would go, if we're going to go 8-9, if we did, I would go Cooper DeJean and Riley Moss. Moss, because he was just – they didn't even throw at him, and when they did, he was all over him. And then DeJean, he's the one that knocked out South Dakota State's tight end, the great tight end, right out of the gate with a hard tackle, less than 6 minutes into the game. So he had a great game, an impactful game. I mean, that taking out their tight end was huge in this one. And then essentially, the reason I jumped in and wanted to do that, Kennington, was because we just listed 9 players, and it wasn't really intentional. But I knew once we started going down the list of all the positives, it would all be defense. So the top 9 players, all defense. And then even the South Dakota State coach said, you know, that Torrey Taylor is a weapon for that defense.
I mean, absolutely.
So he is essentially a defensive player. Right. We haven't gotten to our offense, so now we might as well get to the offense. If you're going to pick one on offense, it's probably Arlen Bruce IV. Yep. He was about the only bright spot on offense. 5 catches, 68 yards. The only wide receiver with a catch. We hardly saw. Alec Wick got one target, and Spencer Petras just missed him. Brody Brecht and Jack Johnson were out there briefly. Sam Laporta had a drop. The offensive line was terrible, almost to a man. I mean, I'll be reviewing the film, obviously, actually tomorrow, but for DVR Monday. But can't really think of many offensive players outside of Bruce that did anything good.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to be number 10 on the list for me. I'm trying to see – give me a second to pull up exactly how many total yards that Iowa had, but Arlen had 79 by himself. So that's got to be half, if not – a little bit under or over
166. So, Iowa a whopping 166 yards in total offense.
Yeah.
So and if you thought last year's 300 was bad, meet your 2022 offense.
Right. That was, and I think that's what is most, you know, as we transition into the offensive part of the conversation, is the most alarming part about this game is that at the end of last year, you felt like it couldn't get any worse. And you enter into the 2022 season, you want to have a lot of optimism. There have been extensive conversations from us, from other publications about tinkering with the offense and simplification and wanting to simplify things and maybe showing something new. And not only were a lot of the same problems presented in this game, you know, I think fans are walking away from this feeling worse than maybe some bad offensive performances from last year. Obviously, some injuries do factor into that. Keegan Johnson, Nico Reganey really limited what they did offensively. And I know that Spencer Petras said this week that they're not going to change much about their offensive game plan, but it was obvious that the lack of receivers impacted their game plan heavily. Arlen Bruce and Alec Wick went almost, you know, an entire half just being the only two receivers present on the field.
Yeah.
Hardly got any targets. There were a lot of times where Bruce and Wick were the only receivers on the field. They went two tight ends. They went Potterbaum as a third tight end. They tried to go heavy a lot. Sam Laporta, Luke Lachey, both lining out wide, lining up in the slot. There just wasn't a lot going on the perimeter. It allowed South Dakota State to crowd the box and really put a lot of pressure on that offensive line. So there was definitely a huge impact in missing those two receivers. Gavin Williams didn't play. Jacob Bostic was maybe somebody who might have gotten into the rotation, but the way that they played it, I'm not sure he would have played much today. Just based on what we saw. So you do have to factor in injuries to at least the passing game not showing what you would have liked. But you would expected that their offensive line in the run game would look a lot more competent than they did. The interior had a really tough day today of the offensive line. And that's just something that they're going to have to clean up because they are going to face an uptick in competition next week for the Iowa State game. I think we can both agree that if they were to have the same exact performance against Iowa State, like if Iowa State and Iowa opened up the season and we saw what we saw today, this would be an 0-1 team and not a 1-0 team.
All right, so let's just at least address the post game because the two big questions were for Kirk Ferentz were, did you consider changing quarterbacks? Will you consider changing quarterbacks? And also kind of a steadfast thing across the line that Iowa players were pretty adamant that this is not representative of the offense they have, and they believe the offense will be better. Even Kirk Ferentz said we will be better next week. So there's, you know, is that manufactured confidence? Is that or what? Or just experience knowing from week one to week two you can make that jump? You know, just, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, that's what they said. They're going to be better next week. It's not representative. I don't expect people out there to believe it, but that's what they said. So let's talk about the quarterbacks, Kings. And I know from our YouTube viewers, appreciate you all right now. There's a lot of questions here about, you know, Will Kirk Ferentz make a quarterback change? I know you kind of addressed that in your mailbag that's posted, hawkcentral.com. But why don't you take that first, and I'll weigh in with my thoughts.
Yeah, well, a lot of people were expecting a quarterback change coming out of the half. Obviously, we didn't see that. Petras played wire to wire, and we asked Kirk Ferentz after the game if he ever considered a quarterback change, and it didn't seem like that thought crossed his mind. He said mainly because – he felt like a lot of the problems on offense had to do with an entire unit not doing what they needed to do. It wasn't just on Spencer for the reason why they weren't moving the ball forward. Like I said before, the offensive line had a tough day. Looking at the running back position, we know LeSean Williams has played a game before. He played in the Citrus Bowl, but it was his first career start, first career game for Caleb Johnson. A lot of receivers playing in their first game as well. So he felt like just in totality, there were a lot of factors around Spencer. In addition to his own poor play, Kirk didn't absolve Spencer from his poor play. He said that he owns some responsibility, but the entire offense does. So he didn't feel like a change was warranted. And then he doubled down on him for next week, saying that he has full confidence in him. They're not anticipating any type of change, and they're going to roll with Spencer into the next week. And, you know, this goes back to what we talked about on our race show on Wednesday, where you were of the belief that there was going to be a longer leash. And it seems like that is the type of energy that we were getting from Kirk in the postgame.
Yeah, one of the specific questions is Kirk Ferentz too stubborn to make a quarterback change? At this, I mean, he certainly, you know, didn't even consider it apparently today. I mean, I was watching with my binoculars. I was watching the quarterbacks quite a bit, you know, on the sidelines. Would Padilla take the headset off? You know, you want to be on top of that if that happens, but he never did. Never. It was just constantly Brian Ferentz sitting next to Petras on that little bench down there, and they would talk through stuff and whatnot. So yeah, I legitimately believe that he never really considered it. He said what they see in practice is giving them confidence. And that leads, that was another question we got from a YouTube viewer. What is giving Kirk Ferentz confidence in Petras? It's what he's seen in practice, but here's the, it's the stuff we wrote about, what stuff we talked about. If you're a Hawkeye fan, you want to believe that he's gotten better. You want to believe, you know, that he's taken these steps, and you know, you can be as skeptical as you want. Got plenty of emails about that. And what was concerning was we saw the same old issues kind of crop up. I'll point to three examples. There was a screen pass early in the game where Petras got a lot of pressure, but LeSean Williams was wide open. And I'll look at it on tape. It could be, you know, maybe not as open as I thought, but I thought even Spencer kind of like, you know, clapped his hands and like was mad at himself because he just like zipped a screen pass. If you just connect on that, you're going to get a big gainer. They had the screen in the right spot, it looked like to me. Later on, I think it was a 3rd and 3 from inside South Dakota State territory. They had Petras rolling left. You remember that play?
Yeah.
Rolling left. Laporta just a little out. Like it's like a get a first down play. Laporta was open, and he just completely threw it behind Laporta. It wasn't even close. Now, the play would have been negated by penalty, as it turned out, but still it was a bad throw. Obviously, the interception, that's another one. But on top of that, late in the game, finally they target Alec Wick. It's a play that can almost clinch the game. He even gets his feet set, and he just totally short arms it or whatever you want to say, just ground, you know, skipped into Wick. And we know Wick can catch anything, right, Kennington?
So, right, exactly.
So all he just get it near the guy, but incomplete. So we just saw a lot of the same issues, and I think that's where the patience is just not going to be there from the fan base. We heard the boos all day long for the offense and the cheers for the defense. So it just you felt that all last season. It's starting up this season. It does not feel like a good track to go down with a much more difficult schedule.
Yeah, and going just speaking on this confidence point, I know we're talking about quarterbacks right now, but a tangent to the entire offense. Scott Docterman of The Athletic asked about Tyler Ellsbury on the offensive line, somebody who we thought was in the top 7-8 of offensive linemen, and he asked why he didn't play. And Kirk said that the offensive line rotations were based off of what they have seen at practice. So it's not just quarterbacks where he's basing a lot of his decisions on what he's seen in practice. It's trickled to offensive line. I'm sure every other position is the same way. It is frustrating because we can't see what's happening in practice. We can only go off of what Gerald Kirk is saying. But it's not just this blind confidence in Petras in regards to what he's seeing at practice. He said that about an offensive line position as well.
Last thing on the offense, the quick game, you could see the difference, right? You could see him try to get those quick passes out pretty early in the game. You could kind of see the plan, you know, quick, get your feet set, throw it. But it's like passes batted down, you know, nobody was open. It just didn't work. And so you just wonder, that's the other nagging thing for me is you wonder, okay, did this stuff work okay and look good on paper and all that stuff? But now you're getting into the live games where they actually can hit the quarterback. And now it's just a little bit jittery, a little bit rushed. It just didn't look right. I mean, it's not to say Padilla would have done better, but it's just concerning because you want it, if you're watching this, you wanted to see, you know, those steps forward. So,
yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Boy, we could go any direction. Let's just look at the Iowa State game briefly, and then I'll call up some three-word headlines. You start with maybe where has your viewpoint of that game. Now, we haven't seen Iowa State's film. We saw they won pretty big, but has your viewpoint of that game changed now? From before today.
Yes. I thought that, to put it simply. Yes. Well, let me just preface it with this. I never thought that the Cy-Hawk game was going to be easy by any means. But what I did think was there were going to be some tangible evidence that Iowa's offense was going to take a step forward. And knew the defense was going to be great, knew special teams was going to be good as well. But certain things like Keegan Johnson being out, obvious Nico Reganey, all of these things mixture into me thinking differently about this game. But I feel like the way that I saw the offense perform today lends me to believe that Iowa State is going to capitalize on opportunities much more than South Dakota State did. I mean, for as bad as Iowa played offensively, South Dakota State was just as inept on offense. And Iowa gave them every chance in the world to come back into the game, take the lead, make a game out of it. And their defense was just overpowering South Dakota State so much. I feel like if Iowa State is in that situation, they might not capitalize on every single opportunity against Iowa's defense, but they would capitalize on at least one more than South Dakota State did. And I say this because one of the key plays in the game that is going to go down as a basic incompletion but changed the entire outcome of the game was the one of the rare mistakes that the secondary made, where there was a miscommunication and South Dakota State had a receiver wide open for a touchdown and Gronowski overthrew him. And that would have been, that would have put them up maybe 7-0 at that time. Yeah. It might have been 7-3. But this is a completely different game if that happens. And I feel like Iowa State would capitalize on at least an opportunity like that. That's why I feel like I feel differently about this game going into it. I just didn't think that the offense was going to kind of rock bottom the way that they did. It's making me contemplate what's happening next week, because in terms of the health front, we have not gotten any assurances that the offense that we saw today, like, is going to be any different next week. We don't know what Keegan Johnson's status is. I don't think he's going to play. I'm just speculating. Just based on what Kirk said about him and just kind of his body language, I don't think that Keegan's going to play next Saturday. Gavin Williams, we'll see what happens. We know that Nico Reganey is going to be out. So it looks like the offensive unit and the personnel they had today is who they're going to be rolling with at least next Saturday. And if they don't find a way to get things together in the next few days, then it's going to be another unpleasant Saturday for Hawkeye fans.
Yeah, today was a reminder that it is hard to build around a passing game around tight ends. Luke Lachey and Sam Laporta combined for 3 catches for 15 yards. If you got to have some outside guys to open things up a little bit. Run game really wasn't there. LeSean ran hard, 24 carries, 72 yards. I thought he might get to 100, but it just wasn't much room there for him at all. But yeah, I think I'm I don't know. I got to analyze this game a little bit more. It seems like every year we go into this thinking like Iowa's got no chance, they look so bad in the week one opener, and then they come out and they play a really good game in week two. Certainly being at home should help. This is a home field advantage. We saw that 8 false starts for SDSU today.
And it's going to be rocking way more next Saturday than it was today. No shot to the crowd today. The crowd was great. Obviously, they forced a lot of penalties, but the intensity is going to ratchet up a notch from the home crowd next Saturday. So you have to factor that in as well. At this point, I'll still probably pick Iowa to win just because the defense is so great, and I don't think the offense can perform worse than they did today. But in terms of just margin of victory, I'm definitely coming down on that number from where I was at originally.
All right, let's go to some 3-word headlines, Kennington, and wrap things up. And the first one that I really stumbled upon that I wanted to read is from Drew Ott, our guy. My guy, Drew Ott. I almost resurfaced a quote from him from the 2015 Wisconsin game today, where he said, "The defense's mentality, when Iowa beat them 10-6 over there in Madison, when the offense was about as bad as it was today, if not worse," he said, if they don't score, they don't win. That was the defense's mentality. That was the exact defense mentality today. Drew Ott says, thank you, defense.
Yeah. To piggyback off of that from Joey Ricotta, Phil Parker statue.
And to piggyback off that, Lisa Dondlinger, Taylor for Heisman. I mean, there's lots of punting as winnings, of course, as well. along the way. Let me know if you see one that catches your eye, Kenny.
Here's one that should get Iowa fans off the ledge a little bit. Iowa is undefeated.
Yeah,
simple as that.
Yeah. Mark Reed says, Alex Padilla, please. Hawkeye fans seem ready for a change. Just to kind of revisit that. It's like, I mean, Ferentz keeps saying they've got two good quarterbacks. I just think that leash got shorter this week for me. You know, I think even for Ferentz, it has to. You know, we saw last year Kennington win halftime of the Nebraska game. You know, when Ferentz turned to Petras from Padilla to get that spark and it worked. You know, you have to wonder if things struggle next week in the first half, maybe they come out of the locker room in the second half. That's the only scenario I can kind of think of.
Yeah,
where maybe we see Padilla. Mama K, oh my God. It was kind of one of those days.
From our good friend Mark Emmert, Taylor made win.
Very nice. Very nice.
Nicely done.
John Mendoza, miss Charlie Jones. We didn't mention Charlie yet.
Yeah, that has to sting. Like the seeing him play and seeing what he did in that offense. And then watching what Iowa did today, you know, doesn't bode well in your fan. And I texted you this when we were talking, and I don't want to go off into a tangent, but we do know negative recruiting happens. And these were like two poster games for negative recruiting, not just for Purdue, but just, you know, anybody that Iowa's going to recruit against, you know, this year and into the future, just kind of like a snapshot of two different pictures.
I got one more that I want to highlight, Jay Haskovic. If I was still a sports page designer and copy editor, this would have been the headline. It's probably too late for the Register. I know we filed our stuff already, but Jay Haskovic, the safety squeeze.
Okay.
That is a beauty, man. That is a beautiful headline because Iowa squeezed them. And it was a baseball score, 7-3, 7-3. And it's so hilarious to look at the quarter by quarter scores of the box score.
Right.
And South Dakota State 0-3-0-0. Iowa 3-0-2-2. Can't make this up.
Right. And I know you said we're wrapping up the three-word headlines, so I feel like this is a good
one. Go for a couple. Yeah, take a few if you got them.
Okay. Man. Well, I'll save this one for last. I feel like this will be a good one to end off on. But let's see. Lots of injuries, definitely. We didn't mention Justin Jacobs yet, who missed the second half with what looks like a lower leg injury, like a lower body injury. But Kirk Ferentz said there's no joint damage, which is a good thing. It's a soft tissue injury, which, you know, he could be back next Saturday. It could be like a worst case scenario, a Terry Roberts-esque injury where he misses an extended period of time. But it was not the worst case scenario. So we'll probably know more about Justin on Tuesday.
All right. Was that your last one or do you have one more? I can't remember.
One more from Tom Kraft. Turn the page.
There you go. Turn the page. And then, there's actually one more here that I lost, but what next, Brian? So that's the thing. That's the question we'll be talking about all this week, Kennington. What next from this offense? Because as I wrote in my column, which I believe now is posted, I haven't had a chance to tweet it out yet or text it out, but this is a championship level defense. All the questions we had about defense, I'm not going to say they're 100% answered after watching a game against an FCS opponent, but boy, that they look good. They look really good. They look really good. Now, Justin Jacobs, you want him back. But can Iowa's defense, offense, can they climb to average? That's all you need this offense to do. Climb to average from now until Michigan game. Maybe even have to extend that a little further till you get to the November. Can you climb to average to put yourself in a position to compete for a championship? Because this defense and this punter and these special teams are going to give you that chance.
Yeah, this an average offense with this defense and special teams unit is a New Year's Six level team, easily.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's as simple as that.
Kennington Smith, Chad Lysico of the Des Moines Register, taking you out here momentarily. Appreciate you guys all joining us for this adventure that we're going to try to do. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We're trying to do about 30 minutes each post game. See how it goes. Hope you enjoyed this. We're HawkCentral.com, YouTube Hawk Central page. We're going to try to be a little more positive next week, Kennington. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. We're coming with the positive vibes next week.
More than 7 points. Do we guarantee Iowa scores more than 7 points?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. Progress. Progress. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you. And I'll let the music take us out from here. Until next time, Chad Lysico, Kennington Smith from the other room. There you go. Hold on. We'll see you.
I don't even know.
Take care.